So welcome along to the first ever Fundamental Golf podcast. I'm Ben, obviously, and...
I'm Emma Brown.
Welcome. And tonight we've got a very special guest, and it's Tiffany McKenzie, who is the... Well, in fact, I don't know. I'm not going to say it, Tiff. You can explain who you are and what you're about, and we can go from there. Is that okay?
Yeah. I'm a PGA professional based at Saunderton Golf Club, which is in sunny North Devon, by the sea.
And what do you do there?
I basically coach. That is my sort of niche. I now full-time coaching. I used to work in the shop, but now I've evolved into doing the full-time coaching and looking after the coaching program.
Okay, brilliant.
So Ben, just a quickie. So Tiff is always really good at underplaying, like, I just do this. Tiff, what do you do in terms of your programs, just before we go on anything else? Like, you develop the whole program for Saunderton, don't you?
Well, we're really lucky that they give me a lot of flexibility at Saunderton, and they're very supportive. So we've got beginner junior coaching, and then we've got intermediate junior coaching, then we've got the elite junior coaching, and then we've got the scholarship program. And then obviously we've got adult programs within that as well.
So you've kind of helped develop all of those, haven't you?
Yeah.
See, so Ben, when I said she'll underplay it, she'll go, I was like, there we go.
By the sounds of things, there's a little bit more than that. It's it's quite impressive by the sounds of things. So have you ever played Saunderton then?
So I played it in the English ladies, English girls, Tiff, when we played it at first?
I think it was English. We did English girls and English ladies.
Yeah, so I've played it a couple of times. But I literally was going to go down and play with Tiff last year, and then obviously. And then this year I would like to go down, but you'll probably be so rammed, Tiff, that it'd be like, see you in 2025.
Yeah, it's gonna be a busy one, isn't it, when we come back, I think. Sorry, Tiff, didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's fine. It's gonna be busy, yeah. Well, it's a good thing to have, you know, be busy, but it's trying to get the balance between the members getting what their needs and the visitors as well.
Yeah, is the English boys there or something there this year? Are you holding that?
Next year we're going to be holding a big English England golf competition, which will be good.
Yeah, that sounds great. That sounds really cool. I've never played Saunderton either. I've only been down there to float about in the sea a little bit on the seafront there. When I used to think that I could surf, where actually I'd never once surfed in my life. I think I can remember going down there years ago with a really good friend of mine, and him and his dad are right into surfing. They're like, oh, do you want to come? And I was like, yeah, I'll come. Yeah, brilliant. And it was between Christmas and New Year. So my first ever experience of surfing was then. So I got there, and I don't know what the surf shop's called, right in the car park there, and got myself a wetsuit and basically floated about in the sea for 2 hours, absolutely freezing, trying to stand up on this surfboard that was, well, let's put it this way, when you're my size, trying to surf on, like, it felt like a fire door. So trying to move it around was like ridiculous. So yeah, that's my only experience of Saunderton. But I do spend a lot of time down there because I like camping and all that. But all I've seen is the photos that Emma shares and so on and so on.
You put some really good photos out, Tiff. And Saunderton, to be fair, whoever takes the photos for them, you might do, I don't know. They put some lovely photos out on Instagram.
Yeah, no, we've got a new chat who's sort of organizing the social media, Will Smith, and he is he's been a fantastic addition to the team. Yeah, I know. he's young, enthusiastic, and just a really top guy, so we're very lucky.
Cool.
Yeah, the photos that I've seen on the Saunderton website today, or not the website, the old Instagram, look incredible. All the new work that they're doing and installing steps and stuff like that, and just nice photos of the frozen ground and stuff like that over the winter. So it's been quite nice to have a look at that today.
Ben, we'll have a road trip down there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I need to play some golf down there. I'm not very well travelled with the old golf yet, but I'm sure we'll get there.
Anytime.
So to the topic, I suppose. We're supposed to be talking about junior golf today. And I say supposed to, we will talk about junior golf today. And that was actually on your request, wasn't it, Tiff? I think, is it something that you're quite passionate about, junior golf?
Yes, definitely, yeah. It always had the lion's share of my coaching. You know, you have your availability and your time, and you've got your main focuses as a coach. And yeah, junior golf, it's always been something which I've just loved to participate in, and you know, just my number one thing.
Would you say that would be your, not, I don't want to use the word specialist, but like, would you say that that was on top of your tree with what you enjoyed the most, or just love coaching in general?
I love coaching in general. To me, I just get so much pleasure in, say, helping somebody who's just had a hip op and they need some help with changing their swing ever so slightly to work with their new movement patterns. You know, if they've got any sort of mobility issues, and then you know, you can help them, or if you've got somebody just starting. But yeah, junior golf has always been something which, golf did so much for me as a junior that I just want to give back what it gave me, so that's why I just really enjoy doing it.
That's cool. Where were you a junior, Viv?
A lovely golf course in Wiltshire, Bowood. It's brilliant. Okay.
Yeah, nice. That's
pretty good run. Nice. Bow is not too bad of a course either, is it? I'm sure a few people have played there. Is it? Wasn't Robbie Williams there not so?
He's a member there now, apparently.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
That's quite impressive.
Not far off.
I heard that's where
Tiff got married.
Where'd you get married, Tiff?
My mum was a bit. She was like, I can't believe this, Tiffany, but she wanted some castle in Devon or something. But I was like, no, I want to go back to Bowood because that is my happy place. So we had a weekend at Bowood, and our guests, we said, we don't want any presents. Can you come and stay? So we took over the whole hotel. It was brilliant.
We took it over.
We played a golf tournament.
What an event. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was good fun.
That sounds brilliant. So in terms of junior golf stuff then, what, because I've asked a question on Instagram today and popped up a load of stories, and one thing that has sprung to light a little bit is the amount of barriers there are for youngsters to get involved in golf in general. And I'm not just talking about people getting access to the courses, we're talking about equipment, as you've mentioned previously in what we were having a conversation beforehand. I just want to know what your thoughts are. What are the barriers? What do you think they are? I know loads of people have commented already, and I'll mention some of them in a minute, but I just want to know from both your ears, really, what are the biggest barriers for youngsters getting into golf?
Do you want to go first, Emma?
You go first.
I do think it has got much better. I really think with you've got England Golf doing phenomenal things for junior golf, and you've got the other governing bodies, and then you've got something called Golf Access, which is being really popular and supporting juniors to make, well, it's really bringing to the attention of golf clubs that you've got to try and make your golf course a little bit more accessible for juniors.
Before you go on then, Golf Access then is, just explain it a little bit more, because I've got very limited knowledge. I think is it the tees, the different coloured tees from different areas, or is that something else completely? I might be talking about something else.
The Golf Access, one of the lead chaps is called Simon Wood, and it's Simon Wood, isn't it, Emma?
Yeah.
You know me and surnames. I'm like, oh, go on. Basically, he's just wants to bring to your attention that you've got to make the courses more accessible for all age ranges and all abilities. So you're absolutely right. It's encouraging juniors, clubs, you know, junior sections to have tees in certain locations so they can be golf access tees, or you can use your own colour scheme, put them anywhere you want. sort of working into the premise, I believe. Obviously, I'm not an expert on golf access, but the fact it's a par three, you want to make it sort of inside 100 yards, par four, 150, par five, 200 yards. That's your starting zone. And then you've got your scores that you'll do, and you've got to try and beat that score for nine holes, and then you earn a band, which is they've got a colour system, and you work towards basically shooting a lower number in your own time, which I think is really important. So you've got, you're challenging yourself, and it's building up your golf stamina to then go, okay, I can shoot X, and now I think I could take on 18 holes, maybe do 18 holes from the golf access tee, and then you build up and then move back to, you know, say your yellow tees or something.
How long has that been about? Have you used that, the Kendra, a bit? I saw a sign. How long has it been going for?
Yeah, well, I brought it into the Kendra for beginner adults, and then Tom started to use it with our juniors. So we've probably had it 3 years. Would you say, Tiff? I don't know. It's not a really old thing. It's quite new, but it's massive already. I mean, it's going worldwide. But we started using it for our women, especially our women's beginner groups, over on the badminton, and that has really helped the development of it, because it's just more feasible and it's easier for people to see, like Tiff was saying, about progression and stuff.
Yeah.
But I think the way Simon talked about it, it was like, if you're doing karate or something and you go through your coloured belts, it's kind of, you get one belt and you get, then do something else and then you get another belt. So yeah, I think it's a really good way of getting everyone into golf for sure.
No, I agree. I think it sounds great. I've heard adults talking about it at the Kendershire before. Not so much with the juniors. I know we're trying to integrate it in some of the stuff that we do, but I think it's something that we need to chat about a little bit more, in my opinion. Just because, if we can, just only because of some of the questions we've had from, by the sounds of things, of dads of wondering when they can get their kid or their child, sorry, not their kid, their child onto a golf course and start playing around a golf. And the questions we've had are, in terms of, is there a minimum age? Are there youth specific golf courses so they don't hold up play? What's an acceptable age for them to be playing 18 holes? And that we've had 5 or 6 questions around that, which is quite interesting. So I don't know what your thoughts on that, Emma and Tiff, because you guys are doing all the junior coaching, I think.
Well, I think Tiff does probably a little bit more than me, because I don't do a lot of junior coaching. But like, let's say someone, you've got a parent or someone that comes into the pro shop, Tiff, and they've got their little 3-year-old, and they say, right, make my kid good. What do you do?
Well, you know what? It's so funny you say that, because before I was a mum and like a 4-year-old would come in, I would be like, I'm pretty young. You know, you would say, you go, okay, we could do it. I'll offer a 1-to-1. Let's maybe do 20 minutes. You can watch what I say and I'll keep it very simple. And then from what I've said, you've got then some substance to then take your child down to the range next time, or onto the putting green or chipping area, and you can just go for it. You know, just give them the bare bones, the foundation, instead of going, okay, I'll see you every Tuesday, 4 p.m. You know, you actually make it so it's an activity they can do with their parents. But, you know, but now that I'm a mum, and I took my daughter to a gymnastics class, and this gym teacher, coach, she has got 4-year-olds, you know, 12 of them doing a circuit. They're doing different circuits. They've got different activities in each area. And she had it all under control. And I thought, this can be done. So now I'm like, last summer, tried out some 5-year-olds. I did a sort of camp at Saunton with some 5-year-olds, and it went really well. And the only thing I was worried about is I said, okay, Izzy, you can join in, but you know, mummy is coached today, which she just is like, okay, and you know, she's gonna be a menace, but actually she did be proud. But yeah, and it worked. And I was like, okay, there should not be any restrictions. Just, you know, you've got to be flexible, open, talk to the parent, and then make it work for everybody, you know? Yeah, there's some children, there's some children that love participating in groups. And then there's other children who need maybe feel more comfortable in a one-to-one situation.
Absolutely. I was having a little laugh and a chuckle when you mentioned gymnastics, and Emma will laugh at this. My wife owns her own gymnastics club, so she is fully gymnastics to the eyeballs. It's basically our life away from golf and kids, because they go all over the place doing that. But no, you're right, they have little tiny dots of young children doing all sorts, and this is quite impressive to watch, actually. But yeah, no, I completely agree, because I've got a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old. My 3-year-old, I'm scared to take anywhere near a golf club just because he is wild, absolutely wild. But my 6-year-old, I took her to some lessons with Tom, didn't I, over at the Kendershire. And she went into a group session, first of all, and still is in a group session, but she absolutely loved it. But what I wanted to say is, like, the fact that we try and make it so open is so, so important. I take Edie down to the golf club, not just to play golf, but to experience the whole thing, so she can get comfortable with where she is, the environment, go in the buggies, have a little drive around the course when I'm playing golf and having a bit of a giggle, then go on the academy course. We've got the academy course, which is brilliant for the youngsters, because only how long the longest hole, Em? I can't
remember. 87 or something. It's under 100, yeah, though, isn't it?
And there's about 6 holes that you can go and chip and putt around there, and the youngsters absolutely love it. And I know, we're running the risk of going on to a different topic a little bit because of golf and how intimidating an environment it can be. I think for a youngster, if you see all these adults, all these balls getting whacked left, right, and centre on the driving range or on the course, and all the loudness, it can be quite an intimidating environment. So that's what we're trying to do with our youngsters at the moment. And whether it's right or not is a completely different question. But how much junior coaching are you doing at the moment?
Not a lot. I've worked out, that's not my, I won't lie, it's not my bag. So that's why I wanted Tiff on board, because without doubt, Tiff is probably the most, I'd say, I'd like to call you, not underrated is not the right word, but like, you're so good with juniors that I wanted for people to see and speak to you about it. Because I think you just don't get any recognition. Well, you do a little bit, but like, I think people should ask you more, because you teach juniors really well. So that's why I'm staying out of the question.
You're dodging that bullet. You're dodging that bullet.
But I think for me, like, if anyone was to come to me and say, "Oh, my kid's 5 and they want to play golf," like, I love the Diddies. I work with the county and they give me the little ones, so they're probably 7 to 9 years old, and that's my mental age bracket, I think. So that's where I quite like little ones, but when they get over that, I'm like,
you don't know what
I
to
can't
do
cope with them.
I would actually say that's a bit of a porky pie, because the stuff you do with the Kendrick Kids Foundation, they're older than that, and you're amazing with that a lot. Or is that just different?
I think it's just, I don't know. I think, like, I don't know, Tiff, your opinion, but like, parents start to change when kids get older. And I don't know if the parents' expectations, I don't know if you think about this, Tiff, but like, when you've got a kid who's like 4, 5, 6, something like that, they're just like, yay, my kid's got out and they're doing stuff and they're getting getting experiences. And then when they get to like 10, 12, 14, they kind of half expect their kids to be brilliant at it and just change. Like, they all change. So I don't know what your thoughts are.
Is that true
on
your end as well, Tiff, with the parents? Do they become an issue, or are they actually quite on board without obviously upsetting anybody?
I think the biggest thing is, I look back at how I was coached, and you literally were. You were just dropped off, and your coach with the all-knowing, all-seeing person. You didn't question the coach. You know, it was like you were on a need-to-know basis. It was like, okay, so my grip has to be like this and the ball needs to be here. You didn't say why. You just did it. You know, you just got on with it. And I think that's probably a negative for me, because I didn't fully appreciate why I was doing something. So then if something went a little bit astray, just a minor thing which can creep in, like you start putting the ball too far forward in your stance, and then you like have to start to manipulate your swing to sort of find this, you know, middle of the face. But yeah, it was like you sort of, my parents didn't play golf, so they just trusted the coach. They knew I was a great club. And, you know, and then afterwards they go, how was that? And I went, oh, brilliant, loved it. And then I went back for more. Whereas now parents are sort of, there's more parents, I think, observing your sessions, which I think is a great thing. If they want to do that, it's brilliant, because then they can see how you're coaching, so that they can, if they do go to the range and they watch their child, they can then give them that sort of positive feedback and say, oh, don't forget X or don't forget Y. You know, and then it's like, I think really the big thing that I'm learning, and I learned this actually, you know, coaching at Millfield, was that you have to communicate with parents. You know, you have to. Like in Millfield, it was very much, it was email. You know, because everybody's here, there, everywhere, boarding school, you know. But it was the ability that they could contact you straight away, anytime, and you had to reply. You know, there wasn't any of this dilly-dallying. You were, like, on it. And from that experience, I've now realised at Saunton that you do need to just keep the lines of communication open. And you need to, if you invest time and say, look, I'd love to have a meeting with you. You know, there's some older children that I sort of organise a meeting with the parents, sit down, and they're both in the room with you, the child and the parents. Then everyone's on the same page and you know where you're going. And if anyone's uncomfortable, they can say there and then, you know, I'm a bit confused, and then that helps really, because there are still quite a lot of parents who, you know, don't play, but their children enjoy playing.
I know I'm not from a golfing background as such in terms of coaching, but I've coached rugby quite a lot back in the day, and I was just trying to get my in perspective with the gymnastics as well. It's not very often that parents are able to kind of watch or view the sessions very much. So for me at rugby, I used to get dropped off at rugby and my parents would just disappear. I'd go and do my thing and that was it, and go back again. Like the gymnastics again there, they've got one viewing window, which is tiny for like a 11,000 square foot gym. So obviously not everybody's going to be able to see their child or even listen to what the coaches are saying or what's going on. I think it's really important that open communication, just so everybody feels like they're in the same boat. I know with the adults, and that's easy for you, isn't it? Because they're the ones that you're taking part with, and there's nobody watching them, is there? And I think that communication is really, really key. And that,
yeah, I think that now I would say, compared to when Tiff and I were juniors, like I did Tiff. I'm not saying we have email. We had email, didn't we? Back in the day, so we had letters.
We didn't have email. Remember, we got a letter today.
Yeah,
be here.
Yeah. So I do think
with a header. I made it.
I think I've still kept that somewhere. Signed by whoever it was. I do think obviously things are easier to communicate with WhatsApp, with Facebook and stuff. Like with ours, Tiff, with the groups that we do, the Kendrickshire Kids, we've got a Coach Now group that we put everything on. And we've got like a couple of WhatsApp groups. Do you use anything with your peeps in particular? Do you use?
Well, I've kind of had to. I've kind of changed because I don't want to go into the nuts and bolts of my life. But basically, my husband, he works at the weekend because he's a pro. And you can't both be working and then the little one be at home. So I've had to step back from... I know, it's so difficult. I've had to step back from doing Saturday coaching, which I absolutely love. And so we've got six pros where I am. So we've got two great coaches, junior coaches. They're not junior coaches, but they just they do the junior coaching sessions. And they have, been told, set up like a WhatsApp group. But we do have a closed Facebook group. So I believe in having some privacy, not because you're trying to hide what you're doing, but so parents and children feel comfortable with being on social media. So this our sort of area for juniors is closed, and then we post what's happening, activities, updates, you know, with all the New England golf rules, and then the world handicap system changing. My God, don't ask me any questions on that.
It's a formula that I have no idea how it works. Somebody just tells me on an app that I've got this. I'm like, okay.
Okay,
I'll deal with that. I'm glad you're the okay person, because I'm just minding my own business having coffee on the balcony at Saunton, and I get like 10 questions about it, and I'm like, over to Liz. Liz
Do they ask you that general. As well, then?
Well, no, they expect you to be the fountain
of all knowledge.
I think they asked me once, and I was like, I think I did it on a group chat, and I was like, haven't got a clue, but I might read into this. Just like,
but then,
there's a website, there is loads going on.
But I'm the same with you on even just like equipment or balls or anything. Like, Em, what do you think about this? And you're like, I only looked at it, Ben. What are you on about?
I didn't even know that existed. Yeah. No.
So yeah, go on, Em.
Yeah, no, sorry, Ben. You go for it.
No, you carry on. You've got something to say. You always got something good to say.
Oh, no, it was just questions, because I'm mindful of time. So, Tiff, I don't know if you ever had Ben and I just chat, pretty much similar to how me and you chat. Suddenly, it will be Friday, and we'll be like, oh, we didn't ask anyone's question.
Get the questions out first, and then we can talk.
Yeah. Let me fling a couple. So, Lee Evans on Instagram, he's got two questions for you. So, he's got a five-year-old... I know, he's cheeky. He said that. He said, sorry for being cheeky. He has a five-year-old son who's really enjoying the sport at the moment. What is the best age for him to start playing a few holes with me?
Straight away.
Just get him out of the
court. I mean, what's brilliant is just, you know, take a few balls, you know, like, a 7-iron or an 8-iron and a putter or something, and just put the ball down in the fairway and just have a go. You know, obviously you've got to be mindful of what's going on behind you, but you know, a lot of clubs have, I don't know where is he based, does he say?
I don't know. I was going to say he's wearing a Man United football shirt, but that could mean anywhere.
Red Devil. I'm just watching so much football at the moment. Is it normally this much football on? And apparently they're trying to catch up on the lost season. So I'm like, oh, wonderful. Oh.
Thanks, Albert.
I would say you've got your short game area where you could do some little bit of chipping. You've got your putting area where you can introduce the putting. Getting on the course, though, is, you know, I don't think there's a limit now. You know, I used to think, okay, you've got to be strong, you've got to be able to carry a bag. But, you know, nowadays, I would say I had Izzy on the East Course at Saunton at 4 just with me. We were lucky because we got to go in a buggy, and then she just pops out. I put the ball, you know, halfway up the fairway. She pops out, gives it a whack. If she gets tired, then I hit one, and then she hits it on the putting green. Oh, it's like tennis. It's like, I'm like, oh, God, please don't take after me. But yeah, and even now, I go in the bunker. You know, at Lynx golf courses, the bunkers are pretty brutal. But I'm like, just have a go, you know, because I don't like that, you know, if you have to come out sideways, or you have to tee up the sand a bit, you know, or put a tee into the sand, just have a go. So I just say, if the course is, you know, lets you go for it.
Cool. Like that.
I think that's brilliant. I think if all sports could take a leaf out of that book as well, just say, just have a go. Just give it a go. Yeah. See what happens. If it don't work out, it doesn't work out. Let's try again a different way or do something different. I think that's brilliant. I do.
Do you think that, like, doing it that way is so much better as well? Because if you go to driving range, my attention span at a driving range is of a gnat. And once I've hit about six balls, I'm like, oh, shiny thing or something. Whereas at least if you're on a golf course, you will almost tell if they are enjoying it or just need a rest or you need to hit a couple of shots as well. And they're taking in all of the atmosphere. They're getting outside. It's kind of like a win-win situation being out there, don't you think?
Yeah, no, it's great. And I would just say the only thing is if you can have a buggy, it's great because then they're not using their energy on the whole walking process, because when they're that tiny, it's kind of like, oh my God, are we there yet?
Yeah.
And then they kind of go, and, you know, even I'm trying to go on the bike and things and I'm like, we will get to the bridge. And then Izzy's behind me and I'm like, she's like, I'm tired. I'm like, just keep going. Just keep swimming. You know, and I keep going, oh, we're almost there. Just round this corner.
Chocolate bar.
Yeah.
If you can go in a buggy, then you get to do, I would say, a few more holes. If you're on foot, then you just want to be sensible and say, set your target at 3 holes. So everybody finishes with a smile, because you don't want it to turn into like a, you know, just a stamina test. It wants to be about the hitting and the putting and, you know, the fun bit. So if you can go in a buggy, you could do a few more holes if you're on foot, probably 3 holes if you're 5. So I hope that answers the question.
Jolly wonderful. And then second part, he says, besides having fun, which I'm so glad he wrote, because that is like, importante. What are the first things I should get him to work on technically?
You're asking the wrong person.
No. Can I guess? Would it be a complete no-no and just have some swing a golf club and have a bit of a giggle with it? Would that be it, or is there more to it than that?
I reckon Tip would say that to start off with, just to get him out playing, and then suddenly, which it's gone full circle if you notice now. So before, sorry Tiff, I'm taking over just because it would be like, right, just get them out and play. Don't matter how they grip it, don't matter how they stand to it. Tiff's really passionate about the grip, as passionate as I am about posture. And like, literally, if we went, when was that seminar we sat and you argued? And I was like, that you were like, I don't believe you. I think we're you did not argue.
No. My point is, it's all very well and good telling someone you can grip it how you want. And then they go to join a golf club and then they realise that they have to have some control over the ball and the flight because they've got people waiting behind, you know? So I think you're lulling people into a false sense of security if you go, oh, just, you know, pick it up, give it a whirl and you know, and they're topping it or it's got, you know, it's, You get satisfaction out of seeing that ball fly. I would think you get that satisfaction. You know, when you're on the range and you're just round watching people and they hit a butte, it just goes poof, and they're like, there we go, I'm back. You always hear that, don't you?
Got it.
I do that all the time. Yes. I can play golf again.
I'm not going to name names, but it was actually about ladies golf.
Yeah,
so it was, wasn't it? You remember?
Yeah.
And it was about getting people and not wanting to over, and I totally get the concept of not wanting to baffle and just pour so much information on somebody that they're just like, and now you've got to hit the ball, you know? You know, I totally get that we can sometimes go OTT. And then also you could technically, I've seen it, somebody talk for 20 minutes before they've let someone just hit the shot, you know, because they're just prepping them, getting everything in place. So it's a balance, you know, I'm all about the balance. But you've got to think about the next pro picking up the reins, because it's all very well being a beginner coach and going for the fun, enjoyment of the game. But you've got to think of, for me, it's retention. I want to keep this person in the sport. I want to get them to keep enjoying, keep turning up and keep playing. If it's raining, if it's windy, if it's sunny. And I think that's sometimes forgotten. And I think if you know, I'm a big believer of like reading and watching other people from other sort of sports or businesses, mm-hmm. and learning about performance and how they got to the top of their game. And the common theme is always you learn your craft, you learn the foundations. And for me, you know, your setup, your posture, your grip is an important foundation. And I know the grip is changing, evolving, and you've got different styles which will suit different types of swings. And you don't want to just go in there and go, it's only one way. But for a beginner, I think you've got to say, right, you're a right-handed player, the left hand has to go, you know, above the right hand. You can't just hold it like willy-nilly, can you?
But you do get like little diddies who tend to grip it the other way around. And the thing is, if you leave them, and I've seen it, you leave a kid like that for 3, 4, 5 years, they don't enjoy changing it the other way if they play like week in, week out. So totally with Tiff on that in terms of fundamentals.
No, I was just about to say, my lad, 3 years old, he goes wrong hand over the top every single time, even though he's right-handed. Well, I say he's right-handed, we don't even know what handed he is. But in terms of, he looks right-handed in terms of throwing a ball, he will go the opposite way around. So all I'm trying to say, oh no, try and do it this way, try and do it this way, and going that way. So yeah, I understand that.
I know, and I think, you know, it depends on the age of the person. And this is where we've got the little crossover here, this particular conference we went to was very much sort of orientated about ladies' golf.
Yeah.
But if you've got like a diddy, like I've seen, you know, children in nappies swinging the club, and they're not hot, they're swinging it like as in a right-handed method, but they've got their hand the other way around. Let them do it, you know, that's okay. But if you're at a certain age and you want to get, you know, you come across grips, basically sometimes people create these faults and habits, and I would say sometimes habits which are going to hinder them reaching their full potential or their next level, purely because they're breaking for me an essential part of that foundation, you know. So you know, for example, I was given men's clubs because they said, all right, you've got enough power, you can hit men's clubs. But looking now back at it, they were too upright for me. So then I was like standing further away from the ball, had the toe up in the air, and I'm developing a right to left movement of my flight, dropping it inside, because I'm trying to adapt to the club. Rather than now, we've got all this wonderful information. The club works for us, you know. So I think sometimes you can hold it in such a way that it can encourage you to make some movements which may bite you in the bottom later on in life, you know. That's all I would say. So I say you've got to man mark these things and say, is that hindering you or is it helping you? If it's helping you and you're hitting this wonderful shot, leave it be. But if that horrible shot creeps in when the pressure is on, something's got to change.
So would you say, like, take Lee's question, would you say general setup would be the thing that he would go out and not like bombard his child with it, but like just like gently add stuff into each practice session?
Yeah, I think you just got to try and maybe encourage the club face to be pointing where you want it to go, you know? Mm. And then if the club face is in the right position, it doesn't need to be perfect. But if it's pointing down the fairway, say, or towards that zone, then the body will naturally get a bit better at setting itself up, you know? Whereas sometimes we go in body first and then we put the club down and then you're like, ooh, you know, why is it going off to the right? Because sometimes, you know, you could be aiming a little bit too much with your body to the right and that pushes the club head. And then you think, oh, gosh, it ball's wanting to start right. So you learn to use your hands and manipulate it to make it start left, you know, on the target line. Yeah, so I say just simplifying it, just, you know, try and get that club face pointing in the direction. And that's that principle. It depends, again, what age you're talking about. But if it's really diddy, five-year-old, just getting that premises of maybe a triangle with the ball at the top of the triangle and your feet, you know, in a sort of shoulder-width stance. Because you don't want to be too wide. Because I've seen nippers where their stance so wide, you know, they can't move, you know, so it turns into an axe, you know, rather than a flowing motion. So yeah, setup. It's a simple triangle.
I think what I love about this the most is how simple it all is. I think, and golfers of Instagram will probably tell you, there's so much technical jargon within the golf world and the golf community, and especially when you go to some coaches, you get all of that. We can't talk like that with youngsters, can we? We know that. And the fact that you're just talking about a simple shape, a triangle, and let's make sure the club face is aiming that way. And that, not that that's it, but that's like really good starting points for juniors and parents of juniors that are trying to get them on the golf course. I think it's perfect, because as a dad that knows a little bit about golf but doesn't know how to coach golf, that's the stuff that we want to hear, the really easy stuff. Because I come to work, like, to Tom's session, and Tom's brilliant at it. I know this is not a Tom, but I get there and my own anxiety is like, I've got to try and get Edie to do this or do that or do that. And actually, it's not about that. And Tom's having this brilliant session with the kids, and it's all so simple and all so fun. But I think, yeah, in general, what I'm trying to say is parents, it's nice to hear that from a parenting point of view, it's just that simple. It is that simple. Triangle, this, that, that. And then we can look about the, or talk about the more technical stuff when they get a bit older and a bit more wiser.
But I do think that is, that's a trait of a really good coach, though. That you can make something, if you can teach kids and like solidly, I think that's brilliant. Because if you take the technical model, which now is ridiculous when you think of everything going on, even if you think when we qualified TIFF of what the information is out there now after that, if you can take that and then just make it, like you said, into the shape of a triangle, that's wonderful. But I do think parents tend to play golf themselves, probably watch a bit of golf and just read too much golf stuff, and then they try and chuck it all at their like 5 or 6 year old, and they really don't need to, because that is too much.
Yeah. I've got another question for you, Tiff, from I think you might know him, actually. Funnily enough, you know him, Em. I know that for a fact. Dave Bartlett, the old golf professional. He's commented a few times. He wants to know, are you coaching juniors to train for speed more these days than you used to? So I should imagine that's aimed at some of the older youngsters.
Is that me? I'm sorry.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, sorry.
Well, again, it depends who I'm working with, you know, because there's some juniors that I'm working with and they're just on the money. I mean, just one, some of these 14-year-old boys, they're just hitting it so far, because technology is amazing, you know. I know obviously they're very strong, you know, but I would say it really depends on who you're working with. I've got a young lady that I'm working with, And definitely what we're looking for is increasing her clubhead speed. But we want to increase her clubhead speed with stability. You know, you can just whack it, but you got to say, what's the name of the game? This is a numbers game. I'm going to try and get the lowest number. You know, so it's a balance between control and speed. But, you know, if she's got aspirations to be on tour, and you're looking at the club head speed and the carry distances now of the ladies tour players, you know, you've got to be near the average. You know, you don't want to be falling behind. You can have a wonderful short game. But the courses are tending to get a little bit longer. Like when I went out caddied at tour school, I mean, when I was caddying for who I would argue is a big hitter, and she's there and she's hitting her 5-wood into a par 4, 3-wood into a par 4, I'm like, woof, this is tougher. It depends on who I'm working with, really. You know, that's what you've got to say.
No, that's fair.
Where do you want to be? What's your aspirations? You know, like, so I think it's not, I don't look at it and go, right, this is speed, you know.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. So if you treat every individual as their own, you kind of have to make their own plan for everyone, don't you? And I suppose if there's no point focusing all on speed if some youngster, a 14-year-old lad's got a club head speed of 120 mile an hour plus already. You know, I know that's probably it. To be fair, somebody that doesn't know enough about it, is that a good speed? 120 miles an hour? I think that's a bit, isn't it?
Well, Emma's into her speed sticks. Emma knows more about speed.
Yeah, so go whip back round. So because of the kids that I teach, so I probably don't teach predominantly like brand new ones. I probably teach the girls that are in the county setup.
Yeah.
So we do a lot more probably on speed, balance, coordination. So I would probably do a bit more of that because they're in that next level of golf. And some of these, I do think predominantly girls as well, never swing to their full potential, like the absolute batter it. Whereas when, like, Tiff, when you played, like, you could literally hit a 7-iron 150 yards from get-go. Tiff battered the crap out of it, let's put it that way. And then our other friend, Lauren, she battered the crap out of it even more. So there was little old Patsy me patting it down. So I think because I was probably the shortest hitter, I know what that feels like, that, like, I'm back here. So for me, I think I when the kids get to a certain age, I would work a little bit more on speed as well. Yeah, if that makes sense.
It makes sense to me, and I haven't got a clue about this stuff, so yeah, I think we're getting somewhere. And then we've got another question from Ethan, and you may have Ethan popped on one of my lives not so long ago, so he's had a conversation. Ethan is a 14-year-old lad who's a member at the Kendish already. I think it's been announced a lot a while ago, but he's now the under-15s captain for Gloucestershire County Golf, I think. It got mentioned in an email, and I texted his dad saying, oh, congrats, we've known about this for a year, what are you on about? And I was like, maybe it's old news. So anyway, he's got a question for you. He wants to know, how do you think we can get more juniors into the game of golf? Ethan's like a superstar, by the way. He asked the most amazing question, so crack on.
Thank you for your question, Ethan. I would say making the courses more accessible. So that's, you know, is obviously important. And I do feel badly about the pandemic at the minute because there's a lot of members who they're paying full membership and they can't get out onto the golf course. And then, you know, I think junior golf might suffer a bit because of that, because it's just like, where, you know, can we hold these junior opens? Can we, you know, do these like try golf sessions on the golf course when you've got loads of people wanting to tee off and who haven't played for 3 months? So it's going to be a bit of a challenge. I'm sure we'll get around it. I think it's just I think we're just going to take ownership as, you know, pros and say, you know, we've got to go into schools. It's not for everybody. This is the thing. You know, you could have maybe one coach or two coaches at a club, and it's not their thing to go into schools and promote try golf sessions. But that really, for me, is such an important part, because you need to fill that funnel. You need to look at the bigger picture, hit as many people as you can introducing the game of golf, and then they gradually work down that funnel. And so if you go into the school, you might grab the attention of, you could see, like sometimes I see sort of like three or four classes, you know, you've got 30 children in each class, and then you're lucky if you get like maybe 10 who then contact you after that and say, can we come to your golf club? So if you get them to come to your golf club, that's when the parents see the environment, the children see the environment, and they kind of buy into golf a bit more and think, ooh, this is, you know, this could be really fun. So I think it's being willing to try and get golf into school curriculum. I know it's going to be tough and challenging, but it's kind of, you know, you need a bigger audience, really.
I think I don't know if you've been into schools before, but I know I have in my old jobs of sports coaching and doing all sorts of things like that. And I think I coached sport in primary schools for probably 5 or 6 years. And I reckon I did one or two golf sessions ever. And I wasn't even a golfer then. That was just a red bag, you know, the little red try golf bag handed to me and off you go. But I think it comes back to that outreach work that we talk about, the coaches going in. I don't know if clubs or coaches do enough of it to even, well, I don't think they just do enough of it yet. I think it's something that we have to promote more, get more people involved. And like you say, it all comes down to the right coach. And I don't, would you do that, Em? Would you go into a school and coach? Or have you done it before? So
the last, I went in, not last year, year before, started going into local schools with Tom. And I won't say the school, it's one in Yates. We got asked not to go back because the kids made too much noise and basically ran around too much, which I'm just like, for a group of 5 to 6 year olds, whatever it was, I was absolutely dumbfounded that was the response from the teacher. She was about as happy gets. And you just think, if that's what golf coaches are going in, or anyone going in to teach a try golf session, and that is, you are coming against that, like, they didn't want us there from day one. We did it for free. It wasn't as if it was kind of, so that's what we came across with teachers. Yeah. So I think it's got to be a whole massive thing. It's not like a lot of golf pros I know are really proactive. The clubs are becoming a bit better. But at the end of the day, if schools aren't wanting PE, let's call it PE or sports in general, we're fighting not a losing battle, but it's banging your head against a brick wall a little bit.
Just so you know, Em, it's not just golf that you have that issue, because I can remember coaching in primary schools, teaching kind of like the old school bench ball games and all. And, you know, kids get really hyped up for that game. The amount of times I've had teachers or teachers come in, we need to play this game in silence. We're trying to do this and this out there working wise. And you're like, hold on a minute. We're trying to do PE indoors. It's tipping it down outside. We can't go outside or whatever the weather is. We PE, especially team sports, one of the big things, you've got to be able to communicate and have a bit of a giggle with it and enjoy it. But I think you're right. It also comes down to the cost as well, doesn't it? It's got to come down to cost. Like, because having a professional teaching pro go into a school is going to cost some money, isn't it? It's not like we can all do it for free all the time, because we're, as much as we'd love to, it's not as simple as that, is it? And schools costing out, maybe, because I know schools do pay for coaching because that's part of their sports premium budget now. They've actually got funding, and I can't remember how much it is, but, well, I say they've got funding. It may well change now after this the pandemic year. But because I know people that have got businesses that are specifically sports coaching businesses that tap into that premium and go in and coach teachers how to deliver PE at the same time as teaching PE lessons. So they're using it for education and training. And there's got to be a way we can tag into that somehow. I don't know. I don't know whether, I don't know what the answer is, but I know it can be done. But like Tiff said, I think you've got to find the right pro that wants to go out and do that, because it is teaching one-to-one or teaching a small group of five people with a golf club is very different going into a primary school, secondary school, and you've got 30 kids straight away that want to swing this golf club around your head. The health and safety alarm bells are going off. And you've got, I know it's all plastic stuff and rubber balls or foam balls or what have you, but it's bonkers and it can be done. But because I'm quite passionate about sport, and I'm not, I don't want to make this talking about what I'm talking about and what I've experienced in the past, but I've played golf indoors in a prison, and that was on a different number of occasions.
Can you explain that, why you're in prison, Ben, before?
I've mentioned it before, but I used to coach sports within prison settings and mentoring, and we're talking about education programs. So basically there's a prison quite local to here. It used to be a Young Offenders Institute, for the locals that will know Ashfield. And I used to go in there and deliver a rugby academy. So we used to get 30 lads on an AstroTurf playing rugby. But when the weather was terrible, the pitch was frozen, we couldn't do that. So we were always end up indoors. And then one day they randomly pulled out this bag of golf clubs. And I can't remember what it had on the back. Was it Extreme or Street Golf or something like that? But was it something along those lines? And the shafts were like carbon fiber stuff. And they basically didn't travel as far. But when you've got like 30 inmates whacking golf balls around a sports hall, I was just like, this surely can't be right. They weren't real golf balls. And we had a whale of a time. So I'm just saying it can be done. But anyway, that was my background knowledge into that.
Yeah, it's a weird one. I just think, have you had any issues with teachers or anything, Tiff, or schools?
No, I've been very lucky. The only thing is that I went to one school and the space was really small and also on a tilt. So I'm thinking, okay, less than one putting. And I'm just like, okay, this is crazy golf, guys. So you have to adapt with the terrain.
Yeah, big time.
But the biggest thing I think I can say is connecting with the PE teachers, because once you go in once, you build up rapport with the teacher. And now I'm really lucky that with the PE teacher that I know locally, and she basically emails me at the start or at the end of each term and goes, okay, what are we going to offer? And so we can now offer after school clubs at Saunton, so they come for free. And they, you know, they're coming to your golf club, and it's so much better when they come to your golf club, because everything, obviously, safety wise is easier. You've got all the equipment, you've got the space, you've got the range, you've got the short game area, you've got the putting area. You know, you're not going to be like that the whole lesson. And like you were saying, Ben, with the space, you know, you can set it up in a way that the balls are all firing in a sensible manner. They're not waiting their turn to hit a shot for such a long period of time, because that's what was happening with me in an indoor facility. I had 30 children, say, on average. For I tried to do like 45 minutes with 30 children, and then I'm thinking, okay, well, I don't want 30 balls flying around. So then you minimize the balls and you put them into teams, and then you go, right, it's your turn, which is great, because they're still getting goes and you're trying to organise it, but you know at the golf club you can potentially get them to have more goes within that hour period. And also I try and make that ratio 1-10. So I'll be like, look, this is just going to be offered for 6 weeks, maximum of 12 pupils, so that they really get that much better time with the coach and participation time, you know, then, because children sometimes can mess around if they're just waiting to go. I mean, it just, you remember those olden days when you just like in a line and you just, you were hitting balls and then you were waiting for the coach to give you 2 minutes of his time or her time. But now you set up everything, you've got zones, you've got areas, and you try and make each zone fun, and then you rotate them. So it's like circuit training. But even then, if you've got 30 kids, one coach, you know, in a 60-minute session, how many minutes are they really getting? So that's why I try and just make the numbers smaller. And then from that, they can then, if they love it, go on to our Saturday coaching sessions, and they're set up in different age ranges and abilities. So there's follow on, and that again is a player pathway, which is so important for keeping children participating in the game. So I think it's go into the schools, get to know the PE teacher, and then set up the sort of after school club, which parents love. I think parents love after school club at your golf club, and then that's going to help with junior development and participation, I would hope.
Yeah, that transition from school to club is really, really important. I think that's probably the best way I've heard of it so far, is setting up an after school club at the golf club. I know, did you do holiday clubs or anything like that, Em? Or Tom?
No. Tom, I used to do it when I worked at Windmill. We used to do it, okay. We did them all the time. But the problem was, because we were at a range, we had no golf course. Whereas when you're at a golf course, if you can get them to the golf course, it's sold, because the parents or whoever, they're going to love a golf course. Who doesn't?
Yeah. And then the one about my brain that's just kicked off, Tiff, do you provide all the equipment as well? Like, is it all just get on, get involved? You got like a bin or something like that with it all in?
Well, yeah. I mean, we've got sort of, the Golf Foundation are fantastic. The Golf Foundation has just been brilliant for me as a coach, and the support it's given Saunton as a golf club is just phenomenal. So we basically, they sometimes supply packs, you know, those tri golf packs.
Yeah.
Or you can then, you know, save up and buy the extreme golf pack. But yeah, you've got the golf packs. And so when they come to Saunton, they've got all the equipment. They don't need anything. We just say water bottle and warm clothes, because it's a bit like going out to sea, being a links golfer, in the fact that you get down to that range and it feels way colder than by the pro shop. They were like, why are you wearing so many layers?
Because that's why.
Because it's cold.
Funny you mentioned that. Somebody sort of said they call you Three Coat Jeff, don't they, or something? Is that one of your friends? I saw that on Instagram earlier on. I don't know who that was. Did you reply to that?
Yeah, I did, because I was like, we're both exactly the same person, because we all wear so many layers and bobble hats all the time.
Can I just say, why am I not a Galvin Green ambassador? I mean, I don't know, but
you've worn them for as long as I've known you. You should literally message them and say, look, you should be wearing Galvin. It's tattooed on you already.
Are you head to toe in it, are you?
All the time. And all the time.
Oh, and honestly, really smart. their wind stopper wear, you know, I just love it. I just love Galvin Green. I also love the other manufacturers as well.
Just in case anyone's listening.
Don't pull your eggs in one basket.
We're going to get told off. We're going to get told off for this. No, but you know, I do wear a lot of layers. And that's when people will see me out in a restaurant and they'll do a double take, because I haven't got my Galvin Green jackets on, because I've normally got, honestly, sometimes it's cold, you have to wear two.
Two jackets. Well,
I was going to say,
sees me all the time.
I walk into, drive into the candy shop down the driveway, and obviously you've got all the teaching bays on the right hand side. You look over and you're like, oh, there's Em again in all her snowboard gear or skiing gear. She's like, you can literally just see her eyes through like a mask and hats, gloves, snowboarding gloves, three pairs of trousers. Whereas I'm not that I'm trying to be hard or anything in any way, shape, or form. I'm the complete opposite. Shorts all day, every day, no matter what the weather, and I'll be just pottering around. And all the members having a go at me for wearing shorts, just like, it's really freezing, it's this, it's that. Just leave me alone. I just like wearing my shorts, all right?
It is painful. I think I've seen you wear trousers once, and I'm sure you had an interview or something. That's why you were wearing them.
Why was I wearing trousers? It must have been a meeting of some sort.
No, do you know what? That you bought a brand new pair of blue Nike track, and you wanted to show me them.
They were Nike. They were Under Armours. I think. I think I wore them. Did I wear them to your charity day? Because I was with a couple of people. Because we all, he said, I had a message from the bloke that was the team captain, which is Steve Jenkins. We're wearing blue tomorrow, and I was like, all right. And my brain doesn't deal with just that little information. I have to know everything. So I was like, what kind of blue? What colour? Are we going shorts, tops? He's like, oh, right. And he went off on one. So anyway, I turned up in trousers and it was like the hottest day of the year. I was sweating like mad. It was at Lansdowne, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, sorry. I'm going off on a tangent.
Talking about equipment or clothing, golf shoes for kids, clothing for kids, golf equipment for kids. What, where, how, when and why? Tiff, over to you. So let's start with like if kids come to you for lessons, literally bring a water bottle, something comfy, don't need golf shoes to start off with, don't need anything like that.
No, I would say, you know, trainers, you know, comfortable. You know how it, back in the day you were like college shirt. And but you know, now it's much more flexible, you know. You just got, you know, you don't want flip flops. I mean, you know, that's quite a common little thing that can happen at Staunton. It's like they're coming down for the weekend, they're doing some surfing, they run from the beach to you and they're wearing flip flops and you're going, but you know, it's not the end of the world.
I'm sure Em's told me off for wearing flip flops or being barefoot on the range before. Not told me off, but you're like, you're mad.
So what do you get people to come for lessons in flip flops, or literally they rock up?
I had someone this summer, young person, and they showed up in flip flops, and I was just like, trainers are a bit better, you know. You know, we were at the Open and we're watching Green Gloves, whatever he's called, and he's barefoot hitting shots. So there's nothing wrong with it. It does give you a very good connection with the ground. I would say trainers, comfortable gear. And then, you know, you could do junior golf session for a year. You know, if you're just turning up and you just want it as fun, enjoyment, and a little bit of release at the weekend where you just show up to a junior session, you know, you don't need the whole get-up at all. It just depends how far you want to go. If you want to be independent, go out on your own. But even, you know, you can, most clubs, you can pop in and they'll have a demo club or two that they can lend you if you go down to the range. So I would just say that if you're going out on the golf course, and it depends which golf course you're wearing, and you probably do need to start thinking of golf shoes and soft spikes so you don't fall over, and they will give you that extra grip, which is always handy.
I think some places for insurance purposes as well. So if you think if you're wearing just trainers and it's like summer and it's a bit dampish and you're wearing those quite slippery little suckers and you go A over T, I'm sure there is. At my old place, because Uphaven was, do you remember Uphaven was literally like you had to be a mountain goat? I'm sure there was something about you had to wear golf shoes then, because if you fell over, tough luck, basically, or something like that. I think could just made that up, but
no, you know. Yeah, it's better to be safe than sorry.
Exactly.
You see all the golf shoes, and that's all right. I was just talking about, like, you're talking about grip, but you look at like all the latest stuff that the Nikes, the Adidases, the Footjoys are all bringing out. The trainer soles, or the shoe soles, are no different to the pair of trainers that are exactly the same sat in there. So it's like, I suppose it's not really an issue, is it? If they're wearing trainers to your lessons, and you've got the likes of Brooks Koepka rocking around in a pair of 270s that are golf shoes, just because I've got a pair of 270 golf shoes and a 270 pair of normal trainers, they're exactly the same in every way, shape or form, apart from the golf shoes are waterproof and my normal walking around trainers aren't waterproof. and I think the grip's a little bit of a different colour. I don't know whether it's made of a different material or whatever. But I like I said, inclusivity wise, it's just got to go. Like the kids, it doesn't matter. You don't need to wear golf shoes. Just wear your trainers. And
I think most kids have like Astro boot, or like I know Tab does. My little, she's got like football boots, but they're not football boots. They're like pimpled bottoms. That sounds weird, but you know what I mean. Pimpled bottoms. So just I think something. Yeah, something like
don't
that.
Don't wear your daps or your plimsolls, depending on what part of the country you're from.
And then, so most golf clubs, like you said, if the pros will tend to have clubs that the kids can borrow. But let's say you're teaching someone who's been playing for like 2 months, they love it, and their mums and dads or grandparents, whatever, want to buy them something. What would you suggest? Would you suggest like maybe one club or like a little set, or is there any manufacturers that do it really well? Lots of questions right at you.
Oh my goodness, you put me on the spot.
The bus here.
Again, you've got to say, the parents will often have a quiet word with you and say, this is our budget, or look, Larry, don't know why they're called Larry, but Larry, he just jumps from one thing to the other. So I don't want to go mad, So I think you've got to take into account that. But there's a lot of manufacturers that are very good. I don't know if I should name names. I'm a bit like conscious.
Check them out.
US Kids Golf, for example. You could, what the half set offers. So you could think, okay, this set comes with X, Y, and Z. So we could get a club that fits in between. See how they get on, and then you can always add to it, because you can buy one club at a time, or you could buy three clubs at a time, or you could buy the half set, and then they've got like their sort of different ranges for height, and then they've also got different model, sort of I would say a model up, which the material seems to be, made for more sort of advanced player. But again, it suits the height of the child. But then what I'm absolutely loving is Ping Prodigy. I think it's Prodigy. They've brought out this junior set, which is brilliant, because the parents buy the set, and then when the child grows and gets bigger, you can send it back to Ping for it to be reshafted. So you're basically buying the club, but you're getting two sets out of it, really.
Wow, that is a really good idea.
You're right, I just googled it because we were looking at the name, and it is Prodigy. It's P-R-O-D-I and then capital G, Prodigy. And
yeah
exactly what you just said. That's brilliant, that is.
But it has a maximum height limit on it. So this is another thing that I sort of came across with the juniors that we've got, is that you don't want to buy into this necessarily if you're not going to get that second advantage. So if you're right at the top, and you could be a girl and you're right at the top and you're quite close to a lady set, then that's where you have to be savvy, and you have to really do these custom fit sessions with your pro and work out what your club head speed is, your height, your wrist to floor measurements, work it all out and see what's best for you. But the manufacturers really are producing some wonderful kit now, because there are way more juniors participating in such a younger age and, much shorter. I mean, when I started, I was 13, but you've got children starting at 5, even younger. So they're adapting to, juniors of all ages now, which is fantastic. But the thought of buying like a premium great set and then being able to send it off and get it reshafted and not have to pay for another set of clubs is, I think, great. That's, that Ping offering
that. That is great.
Really,
I didn't even know that was a thing. I've seen that TaylorMade do their, I think they do a Rory line, don't they? where they've got boys and girls, or they've got a pink set and a blue set, and that's two different age groups. I've seen, obviously, the US kids golf stuff. Is it US kids? Is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I should know that because I've got two sets of it in the garage. But what one thing I was going to ask you on that note is it okay just to go and grab a second-hand set of golf clubs and give it a go? Because we're talking about getting fitted or buying all these bigger brands. Is it okay just to go? Because I'm asking for myself here. I basically went on Facebook Marketplace. I paid, I think it was £15 for my oldest daughter's set. And my youngster, Alfie, I got his golf set for free because they were trying to get rid of them. They were a 3 to 5 year old little orange set of US kids golf clubs. So is it okay just to go and do that as well instead of having to, like you say, invest in hundreds of pounds worth of gear?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I would say if you know your child's height and the website is saying, like, this is for age X, but it's more for me, you know, height. You know, that's the thing you've got to think about. You can look at it from different points of view, but I really, this is a tough one being, you know, a pro. I would say you just use your pro. Ask your pro, because your pro is going to give you the best advice and will be very sensitive to your budget. Honestly, pro, you know, I would always go to your home pro, ask them for the advice, say, this is what we've got, this is my daughter, this is my son, you know, and I'm sure that they will give you the best advice and help you out and you know, search for something that will be in the appropriate budget range and sensible, because, you know, we want golf, you know, we want people to participate, we want people to play. I think it can be very dangerous when you just go off piste and you think, because sometimes these products are fake. I mean, there are some really dodgy products out there. You know, it's a tough one. The biggest hurdle I find is the young boy who has to, he can't jump to men's reg, you know, straight away. And there's that interim period. And I think that's the scary thing, is when people think, oh, we can cut down. Like, they don't do it now. I know people are so sensible now.
Yeah.
But in the pro shop, I used to see some cut down clubs. And you're like, well, you do realise this makes it stiffer, you know. And, you know, that's a damaging thing. So I would say always go to your head pro, get the advice from them. And then, you know, there are some great companies that will suit the needs. But you can't cut corners. If you're really, really passionate about succeeding in this game, juniors cannot cut corners with their equipment, because it's just going to hurt them. It's going to slow their progress down. I know it's difficult. I know sport is expensive. But, you know, you've got to be careful that you don't rush the process, because you could potentially be creating the ball flight, which is just hazardous to the goals that you're trying to achieve. You know, it can throw you back. Like I was saying with my cup, you know, too heavy, too long, standing miles away from the ball, working it round. But, you know, looking back at it, I'm like, my goodness, I did make it tough for myself, you know.
But you also think, it's like the amount of injuries that can happen. And if you've got a diddy kid that's got extra stiff 3-iron blade, that's their first club that they've got because someone couldn't hit it, so they chopped it down. And that's, you just see it all the time, that the grips are massive and they're like, oh, and then they hit the ground and then they hurt themselves. So it is definitely for swing changes, but also I'd say for injury purposes, is it just sometimes doesn't help.
No. And, you know, you see youngsters who are, they just get so much lean in the spine because they're just having to really work that club. And that's one of the things which, you know, for me, I don't like to see that. I really don't like to see that. I find that it's like later on, that's going to hurt you, you know?
Especially if that, and that comes back to the speed thing. So especially if you've got that movement and then you add speed to it, that's the whole kind of when it opens.
It's dangerous because then you're trying to, you're relying on your hands, and is that going to be consistent? And I can tell you, it's not.
No.
You know, when someone turns up the heat and really applies the pressure, you want something that can handle that pressure, you know? And that's what the way I come from in my coaching. I'm now really looking at the facts. And, you know, I'm just saying, okay, here are the facts. And we want you to play at your best. And, you know, we don't have time for manipulation, you know? I'm over mediocre. And I'm over manipulation.
She loves it.
I love how passionate you are about it. It's brilliant to hear because I think it's really important that we express ourselves like that a little bit because it just proves to everybody when we're talking and listening about this, actually Tiff knows what she's on about, and it's good because she's going off on one about all these different things in a good way, by the way, positive way, and it just, like, for me, like a parent, knowing this, I definitely will look at those free Facebook golf gloves that I've got in the garage now a little bit differently and think, right, when are we going to get them fitted? When are we going to get some proper stuff? Because Edie, my daughter, not that's nothing about my daughter, I know I'm fighting the gymnastics battle. I'm definitely fighting the gymnastics battle. My wife's flying her into gymnastics, but she does love a golf. So I'm maybe going to have to start thinking about that, I think, in the future. But when you talk about asking your club pros, I think Em's one of them, aren't you, Em? What have I got to do for Edie?
So I think, yeah, we'll have a chat. But I also think when, like, Tip talked about it, is golf pros are really keen to help people, especially if they're friends or especially if they are good, let's say good customer or whatever. And that's why, like, going back to Tip and saying, go and see the pros, go and see the head pro, go and see your coach, whatever. There's always ways that they can try and help and offer advice or try and help somehow. I think the golf pros are the first ones that people just go straight past and go straight online and buy everything.
Why is that? Or why do we do that? Why do we think we're just going to get a better deal or something like that? Or is it just...
Yeah, it's a better deal. But pros are price matching. Yeah. They will be, if you write an email and say, look, I can see this, and if nowadays we get it all the time. We ring up or we look online at American Golf or whatever. And, you know, if it's a legitimate thing, a pro will want to price match. You know, a pro wants you to. And I love my thing about a pro. And, you know, it's because I'm surrounded by retail, you know, is that. It's the aftercare that you get with the pro. You know, I just bought something online, died in 3 weeks, and the aftercare and after support is just not satisfactory. Whereas you know that pro is going to give you an answer and help you with the aftercare should you need it. If you don't necessarily, you know, it might come up once in a while, but that's what you're getting if you work with your pro. You've got that whole journey support.
I can relate to that a little bit. I had a bit of an issue with a couple of my pieces of equipment. I won't mention brand names or anything like that, but they were sorted within a couple of weeks. Not just a like-for-like replacement. It was this year's replacement model, and they just sent it out to me. Said, yeah, there's an issue with it. Don't worry. We'll sort it out. And that was within 2 weeks, I think. Em will know a bit about that as well. And I was just like, this is amazing. Like you rarely get that. And that is talking to somebody that knows about it rather than, like you say, getting off eBay, which is like rife with fake equipment, isn't it? Like completely bogus stuff. I'm lucky enough to not have had to deal with any fake stuff, but I know people that have, and club heads are flying down fairways and shafts that bend almost in half just because they're like, just some stick-on thing. But yeah, no, you're right. I think from my experience, every time I've used a pro or spoken to somebody that knows about it, it obviously works. And like you say, people want to help as well, don't they? Like if you're the pro on the other end and somebody asks you help, actually, this is very rare. In fact, there'd be no time at all, really, that somebody would be like, no, I can't help you with that. They'll do their utmost to help you out, won't they? And I think, and they want to do that. That's their job, isn't it? Not just their job, it's just human nature to want to help somebody, isn't it? But yeah, so I think that's really, really important.
Equipment is important, you know, and you just got to look at it. And, you know, it used to be that you think, oh, only the best players got the custom fits, but that's not the case now. You know, you can have somebody who's in your academy, they're looking for their first set, and if they can have that custom fit session with the pro, you know, and pick their first set which is suitable for them, because there are beginner sets out there which are fantastic, but not every beginner set is going to suit, say, someone who's 4'9", you know, or then you'll have a really tall person, or, you know, you've got to use the available resources out there and just, you know, get the best advice.
Yeah, I think golf's a hard game anyway, isn't it? And if we can make it easier for ourselves a little bit, we're obviously going to move in the right direction, aren't we? And that means changing that equipment and doing that. There's no point, like you had to deal with, Tiff, when you were younger, dealing with a set of golf clubs that weren't really fitted for you. You had to change all sorts. Whereas, why are we doing that to ourselves? Do you know what I mean? Especially this day and age with all the technology available.
Yeah, just unnecessary stress. I loved it.
I
love it.
It was a challenge. I'm getting really conscious of time now because we've gone on. Do you realise we've talked for over an hour and a half already? And a usual chat, me and Emma are a nightmare for talking. But I've got not quick fire questions as such, Tiff, but people that have asked random stuff. And they're not subject related, I promise. So, first one, best golf course you've ever played?
Best golf course?
Yeah, ever played. Can't say Saunton, that's out of the window. You're not allowed to do that.
Pebble Beach.
I knew you were going to say that. I should have answered it for you. I knew you should.
So that's another, like a little mic drop bomb.
Yeah, it's got millions of those bad boys.
Can I clarify that it was the whole experience? I love Spyglass. I mean, Spyglass. but
we can go now. We can leave. I'm ready to leave. Sorry, Tim. We've got a shoe. Okay, next question.
Want to play but have never played, and you're not allowed just to say. Yeah, you're not allowed to say Augusta either because everybody says that.
No, I'm not. I'm going to say a really tough one. I'm going to say Carnoustie. That looks intense. Yeah, wow. That looks like a challenge.
Have you ever been there at all?
I've been close. I was like up near it, but I haven't actually been on the course.
Best golfing memory?
I would say it would be my foursome partner Emma.
Yeah.
And we were very young and we beat the foursome's Gloucestershire team because they're like so good. Gloucestershire have always been like so strong. And we won on the 18th hole, and I was just
amazing.
Oh, that this is.
How old were you then?
Wonderful.
So Ben, we were probably 17, 18. What? Well, when did you go to America? It was before first year of you went to America.
No, because then I was living in Devon. I was a member of Saunton. Devon.
It must have been. Must have been like 17, 18, and we are now obviously only 25.
Yeah, so it's only 5 years, seven years ago, whatever.
I can remember though, you putted it. You putted it, didn't
you? The story is, you hit the fairway as you always do. You were like awesome.
5,000 yards by the back.
Oh no, it was brilliant. She's like, you know, she loves pressure. It's like, take that middle of the fairway. And I've got an iron in. I got an iron in. I missed the green with the iron. Well, was it? But it was quite a long one, wasn't it?
It was a long hole uphill.
Uphill. you know where it was. It was High Post.
High Post, 18, yeah.
Yeah. And then I missed the green. And then you give me that look as if to say, and then you got it onto the green, as you would. And then we had this putt. And yeah, sunk the putt, and I have to say, never been happier.
It was amazing. It was honestly. It's bizarre what you remember, but to be fair, we've had so many good, I won't bore you because that'd be hours of golfing experience with Tiff. Like, we've had so many good jollies. That would be my top one.
Get Tiff back on and we'll just do an episode on your adventures together. No, we can't talk about
a lot of those. No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Any more for quick fire? Sorry, Tiff.
Yeah, I've got three or four more. So bear with me, I promise. I'm not trying to bore you. Have you had any hole-in-ones? And if so, how many and where?
I've had as a junior, I classed it as a hole in one. I had it on the third hole of the academy course at Bowood with my 7-iron, and I was like, and it was so funny because there was just this one man hitting balls, and I'm going like this, and Billy No Mate just going wild on the tee. And he did, you know, he didn't even say well done. You know, I was like,
I did that slow walk
to the flag.
I did it.
I did that. Oh, it's in here.
Carol, is that your only one?
My real one was in America when I was it was North Carolina, what could be South Carolina? No,
one of the Carolinas.
It was one of the Carolinas. And I was in a bit of a huff. I've got to be honest. I am sometimes a gremlin on the golf course. As a coach, I'm like nice as pie, but as a player, I was sometimes a bit like, you know, a bit of a gremlin. And I was like, it was the 16th hole, and I hit this 6, and I went, for about time, because you know I hadn't really struck the ball well the whole way round, and then it went in and I was like that, you know. What was gutting is my coach wouldn't let us celebrate or have a drink or anything. He was just like, no, we're here to do a tournament, Tiffany, there's no clubhouse drink, you know, we're tournament mode. So I was like, wasn't really in the spirit of it.
So, did you get drunk afterwards on your own? After the training and all that?
I probably would have.
I would have. I definitely would have. Right, a couple more. So,
Angel.
And these are the usual ones that get thrown out all the time, but I'm going to throw them anyway. A golfing... So, if you could have a caddy, right? You have to have a golfing caddy, a professional golfer, somebody you would all know, and also a caddy option that would not be from the golfing world. So you've got two answers for me, if that's okay.
Like, so a famous person.
A famous golfer, and then somebody away from the golf world. It doesn't have to be...
Can I just say, I think I know who she's going to pick or
No, I'm not.
But it doesn't... The non-golfer doesn't have to be a famous. Who are we going to say? Go on, before you...
Would have said the golfer would have been Nick Faldo.
Yeah.
And the non-golfing... famous person would be Anthony Hopkins, because he was obviously the best animal.
Oh, that's so funny. No, I really
love Nick Faldo.
I'm going to say it. My husband's going to be very jealous, but I do think Nick Faldo is the reason why I play golf.
Did your husband look like Nick Faldo?
No, he looks like Simon Cowell.
Oh my god, I never thought.
Oh, I love it.
That's such a good question. I think I would go for Tiger Woods now. I'd go for Tiger Woods.
So somebody said to me,
do it.
Randomly, somebody mentioned this to me not so long ago. Would it be Tiger Woods of now or Tiger Woods of at his prime between 2000 and 1 to 2000 and kind of 5-6-ish kind of era, when he was like super dominant?
That's a really good question. I wouldn't even have to think on that. It's a good question, but like Tiger Woods now, because if someone's caddying for me, I want them to have oodles of experience, you know.
That's a good answer. It's a great answer. I think also with the fact that now he seems like he can have a bit of a giggle and a laugh when he's walking around the golf course, rather than this. But I don't know much about that because I didn't play golf then, and golf wasn't on my radar. I'm learning about it through YouTube, so I'm catching up. I promise. The non-golfing caddy can be a famous.
Non-golfing. Oh, that is such a tough one. That is such a good question. This is not like my favorite famous person, but for a caddy, I need someone just to give me the number and tell me that where to hit it. Oh, I can't even think. I'm really sorry. My brain's gone. I think Emma, you come as the professional.
Do you know what? Last time I came. Penny for Tiff, I said, you got, I think that was at Woodbury Park. I went, you've got 52 yards left. And she was like, no, I don't. I was like, yeah, you do. Yeah.
Oh, that was the 17th. That was the 17th at Woodbury. And you gave me the right number. Every time you gave me the right number, but I just did not have the control over my length of swing, my lever system, my length of swing. I was like, that was a 50. I watched it over. Honestly. This is what I'm saying, the gremlin. It was just like, I was like a till. I was just like, it's your fault, not my fault.
I ran away with that bag. I was like, quick, push it.
So not like how Paul Casey reacted the not so long ago. Did you see that one where he hits a 3-iron instead of a 4-iron and it goes off the back of the green and he's just looking at his caddy like that, not getting angry at all. Have you not seen it? It's like a famous YouTube clip.
I think I have.
And he's just like,
years ago, been horrible. Yeah.
Yeah. So Emma would be your non-golfing pick then, would she?
It wouldn't be, but I'd let you have that.
I would say, Emma. Yeah. No, that would be it.
Or Anthony Hopkins.
No, we want Anthony Hopkins as my caddy. No,
staring
no.
at him.
Anthony Hopkins is just like, this is class act. You know,
Harrison Ford? What about Harrison Ford? In the day, Harrison Ford.
But my caddy is not eye candy. I mean, Harrison Ford is Indiana Jones. I mean, you know, I was just like, heroes in the day. But, you know, it's like, if you're going for eye candy, I would say Brad Pitt, but I'm thinking of someone level-headed who would be able to just say, you know, give me the fact. I'm always thinking about the win, Emma.
Love where she's got.
I love how serious you're taking this question. Yeah. It's like, it's supposed to be, great. I'd love to meet, I don't know, Michael Jordan or someone like that and have a life jolly with him, but no, it's got to be precise to the number.
I want
to
win.
Would it be like a Professor Brian Cox or somebody like that that would know the inside out of everything that if you needed it? Probably not.
No, for me, less is more. But yeah. You know, I have to put on that, less is more. You know, these people go, like, don't want to go here, don't want to go there. I don't know why they talk like that.
Are they in Australia?
You know, but I less is more. I would say, I've got to be honest here for just a minute. I would say my husband caddied for me once at Sunningdale. It was Sunningdale Foursomes. And he is a very good caddy. But the only problem is he told me 18th hole, he said, you want to aim for the van. And then the van moved.
And then you hit the van.
So I did hit the van, but he's like, aim for the van, aim for the van, aim for the van. And I'm like, I've got it. Yeah. Anyway, next question.
Last one. And it's the old, and I've stolen this one, I'm afraid, from a few people. But dream four ball, who would you have? Can be famous, don't have to be famous, can be family, friends, anybody you like, and you don't have to say Emma just because she's here.
Yeah, you don't. It's all right.
What, like my golfer four ball?
Yes, golfer four ball. Well, not necessarily golfer, anybody.
Anybody. But they've got to play golf. I mean, that would just be crazy.
Is that because you want to win again?
It's winning. Team win.
My four ball, if we're going for golf four ball, my four ball would be Phil Mickelson. Love Phil. Tiger Woods, and I would say Bryson.
Bryson DeChambeau.
I don't think they'd all get on, but
yeah, it'd be fun.
It'd be an experience, definitely.
Yeah,
I think Bryson, the way he's hitting the ball at the moment is just outrageous. Whether it's working or not is another thing, isn't it, at the moment?
I have one last question for you, Tiff. It's absolutely not related to golf. What colour jumper are you wearing? Is it navy or black?
Black.
So there is a reason, because every golf event that we used to go to, most of the time we would turn up in exactly the same outfit. Exactly the same colour without even talking to each other. Like if Tiff stayed at mine and we got up in the morning and she opened the door, she'd be like, we would be wearing similar. And that's what, this is navy. I thought you were going to go for navy. That was all. That was why I asked that. That's a random question. There's a random bit in there.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Okay. No. Could bottle one moment and take it with you wherever we end up going later in life, what would that be? It had to be sports moment.
For personal or for... like witnessing something on TV, or can it be any?
Personal.
You can go first, Dan.
I've got so many, but probably performance-wise, getting through to the final of the British Girls in Blegowrie, and obviously your wedding. That was like part of me when we played golf.
Oh. When
we won, that was another, I've got two.
You got two?
I got loads. I got so many, it's wonderful.
Okay, Ben, what's...
Well, I've got two as well. And one's golf related and one's non-golf related. And one was... The golf-related one was my hole-in-one at the Canterbury this year. Drop that in. Because in talking about holes-in-one, I go, Emma, have you got any holes-in-one?
No, goodbye.
But, just because, just that feeling. I've never felt anything like that before in terms of just a sense of achievement when I was playing terrible golf and I was just like, oh, I've got to get this in to try and get some money back on the two. So it is exactly what I was thinking. And it went in the hole. And I think Tom, if you know Tom from the Canterbury, he was walking down with a load of Gloucestershire county players when I was doing it. So I was literally sprinting down this par three to check if the ball was in the hole or not. So I'd bottle that up. And then I've got another one, which is a bit rugby related. I think when I was 16, 17, we played in the county cup finals, which was Somerset, Bristol area, because that's where we're based. And I scored the only try of the game and we won the game 8-6, I think, the final score.
Oh, wow.
So it was something that was to behold. That gets brought up on Facebook quite often with like a team photo of our teachers and stuff. But that day at that age, when you think rugby is everything, at that time, that was quite a nice one. I'd take that, definitely.
What's your bottle, Tiff?
What sports moment? Personal, I would say seeing the PGA Cup team win.
Yes.
But that's kind of not about me, but just to be in that environment and to see the GB and I team win. I got to see it twice. That was, they won in America, they won. At Fox Hills, that's wonderful.
That's cool.
Isn't it amazing how many like what sport does? So like when people say like why do you play sport or why do you get kids in sport? Like I've known Tiff now I don't know, however many years, quite a lot of years. And it's just that the friendships you build, the memories you build, I just think it's like a wonderful thing why more people don't do any form of sport or anything.
Even not to like a really highly competitive level, just socially. Like, even I will say this about the rugby lot. They're, obviously, it's not golf related. I'm sorry, it's rugby related. But I've played rugby with 40, 50, 60 guys over my time in Clevedon. But I class all of those as like my best mates. Like at any moment in time, if I ever needed one of them, they'd be there without, like in seconds, like you guys would be with the golfing friends. And I think that's what people miss out on. If you're not a sports person, how social and how reliant you become on these people. And I think competitive sports are a real special moment, isn't it? Because you're emotionally going through something with somebody there by your side, whether it's a team sport or you're going through it with on your own if you're individual sport. But like we feel like, even though it's just little Clevedon playing rugby at a half decent level, you feel like you've gone through some battles, some emotional battles on a pitch, off a pitch, and you just become closer. That bond just never really goes anywhere. So yeah, no, I agree, sport's amazing for that. Absolutely amazing.
No, I love it. Thanks, Tiff. Thanks so much for joining us. Yeah. And I hope you enjoyed our first random podcast.
Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't really answer loads of questions.
To be fair, I don't think we asked you that many.
I didn't want it to ever be about a load of questions. Yeah. It's got to be about having a bit of a giggle and a bit of a laugh, isn't it?
I think, loved it.
Tiff, thank you very much for your time. It's really nice to meet you for the first time, other than over Instagram and messaging random messages and all sorts, but I really, really appreciate your time. It's been nice to talk to you.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's been great.
Brilliant.
Enjoy the rest of lockdown, Tiff, and I'll speak to you soon.
Okie dokie.
Yeah, bye. Take care, Tiff. I hope to meet you in person at some point. See you later, guys. Speak to you soon.